Mr. Chadwick, Real 26. We're talking about the end of the Korean War, really, and we're just tying up some loose ends about your time there with the C Company, 1st Battalion, DLI. You were saying you pulled about 30 people out of no man's land. Had the DLI been involved in this series of punitive raids on that day?
We were doing what you could call more the defensive nature. All our machine guns and mortars were mustered for a defensive role to help anyone. As a matter of fact, they did what they call a link shoot with the mortars.
What's that?
Three or four more battalion mortars all together to make it a real formidable task. And it's a hard thing to coordinate. I don't think they were used all that much, but that was their role. We were all on air alert, standing by for any emergencies.
So you'd have the standing patrols out and you'd all be...
But every man on the position was stood to in his trench all night. No letter.
And all you saw them go out and then you got the men coming in.
And you could keep a running commentary with your wireless sets. You could hear advanced voice all far and slight opposition. That's all the normal jargon you get over the airwaves.
Did you have much contact with all these other nations, the Turks, the Belgians, the rest of them?
Oh, yeah, quite a lot. But
where at?
Well, mostly out of the line. We did one raid on the Mungadai diggings.
Tell us about that. When was that?
Well, it's very tricky, this one. It happened on a Saturday afternoon, I can't remember the date. And the thing that struck me was, we're going to raid this Mungadai diggings, about 40, 50 men, I think, were involved. Again, I was told before the troops by Major Trusorman. And I said, what the hell are we attacking them on the guy diggings for? We knew there were thousands on it. To show the flag. I said, well, you're here to do what we're told. So, we're going in at 1400 hours. And the sun was blazing in all eyes as we went over the start line. But prior to going over the start line, I'd been briefed, the troops hadn't. I saw these observers coming, interpreters, war correspondents. I said, what the hell is going on? So I put no one of these Americans. Oh, he said, it's being put on for a film we want to take. I said, she's joking. He said, I'm not. Anyway, we got to the start line. You can forecast what you're going to do going up the hill. The formations you're going to adopt. You can't forecast what happens when you get on top. It's depending what reception you get. We got on top. We put C Company's pennant up. This was crazy altogether. And then, thankfully, we got the signal a couple of hours.
Had you met much opposition on the way up?
Well, no. Got on top. Got the wonderful words. Prepare to withdraw. And it's done orderly. You don't just make a mass exodus. Everybody's halfway down the hill and they started marching. They never came out and there was thousands of Chinamen on that. Looking, as we found out when the war ended, they were honeycombed under those hills. Trucks were running under the hills. And we came back with non-killed, quite a few wounded, shrapnel wounds, flesh wounds, etc., etc. And I put an old Major Sauna about it, and he said, yeah, it was a propaganda film, which I thought was ludicrous, to risk men's lives or even get men wounded for that kind of a film. And that was was on the Saturday afternoon. Not a Saturday, it was not market days there, but it was an afternoon when it would have been doing it in real, well, it was real, but if they'd have meant business, would have gone at last light or first light, never with the sun blazing in your eyes, and absolutely open to everything what they could have thrown at us. Had they decided to do it, none of us would have come back. Not one of us. And that just about finished all the world up. That was just about it, I think.
That was towards the end. Just you said that Jeffries showed himself up very well in Korea. You've mentioned a couple of incidents. Was there anything else that showed you that? What was so good about him?
I've never heard anybody running down. But a thing that made my mind up the most was reverting back to the day when I was in the motor platoon. I was in the command post manning the wireless set. And our RE colonel came on to Big Sunray. Big Sunray is the commanding officer. Big Sunray came up, Colonel Jeffries, and he spouted out he wanted a patrol to go out to do a cadet mission, which was highly dangerous, to say the least. And he said, no doubt about it, the lives will be lost. But I think it's worth, and I'll never forget Colonel Jeffries' words, I'm not taking any risks with my soldiers that I don't have to. So he said, the answer to your question is no, there isn't a patrol available. He didn't deem it necessary, and it wasn't necessary. But this fellow was prepared to start him, send men out just to satisfy his own curiosity of a certain area, whatever. I didn't get the gist of what the plot was, but the category turned him down. He said, I don't risk any of my soldiers' lives, and we never left a soldier behind dead. That was his strict orders. There was no British soldiers to be left on that foreign soil, and none was. With the exception, it's not risky going into this in detail, because none of us know. An officer went missing from the DLI, and he's still missing. And he's believed to be one of these now, in China. You've read the articles about the prisoner of war, well, he's one of them. Now, what happened there, none of us seem to know. I think he was called Richard or something. But he vanished.
What was he doing when he vanished? Patrolling?
He was on patrol. He just vanished.
Did the rest of the patrol go, or...?
You know, I honestly can't say with conviction and to be truthful. At first, it was just accepted as missing. And it was only 20 years after the war that any interest was shown on that man. That it proved he was still alive, and apparently he's still in China, according to reports. I had some press cuttings about it. But there was a big TV program on it quite recently, said there was still about 30 or 40 British and American prisoner of war from the Korean campaign, still in China, brainwashed and working out there. Now, outside that is.
Just some minor points. The cold. You mentioned that the soup cans came in, self-heating soup cans.
Oh.
That came in during the campaign. Tell me about them.
All that you did was take the top off. Now, you're 50 below. You're standing in a trench. We'll say that covers 6 foot, hypothetically. Well, about there, you dig a hole in the trench and you put charcoal through your chest. A bit further down was charcoal for your tummy, and at the bottom, charcoal for your feet. And you could only do an hour standing there. And the old Tennessee. Just take the top off, get below a gas gate, light a cigarette, and just light the fuse with a cigarette. When that burns out, top off, and you're boiling hot chicken soup. They were fantastic. You couldn't get enough of them, especially for those cold nights. And I did experience a Sten-Gun sling as an SO gun, and it hooks onto the barrel, as you know. It, myself, I couldn't find it in the dark, fiddling, and it stuck to my tongue. And I had to go in to a dugout and throw it off. And some lads came back from patrol with 36 grenades glued to their hand. The pain in that gun. It was that cold.
Did you have burners or braziers or anything to keep you warm?
We had. We lost lives with them. We had ham. Out of the line, you had American space heaters. They were marvellous.
What are they?
They were like a big fire, a mobile fire. You could move from tent to tent or wherever you wanted them. And I think they were fed hot diesel. But up in the hutches, they had improvised heaters. A little pipe from there, a little pipe from here. That was petrol, this was diesel. And they dripped. And that kept a continual flame going. Provided we had quite a few casualties burned. We had a colour sergeant burned to death at the echelon. He was very close friend of mine. I see his son every year. He burned his son to death in his dugout. But
what about the fumes? Were there problems with fumes?
What we shooting rats in the dugouts because they were rat infested. And those rats had clogs on. You know, they live like this, but they were like rats.
2 foot.
And one young officer came up. His name was on tip of his tongue then. Better if you don't know his name. And I've got Christmas parcels or anything with cake in. We put bits of cake on top of the ledges of the dugout, you know. And we wait when the rat come and shoot. But this young officer thought, trying to be one of the boys, just joined us amongst his new platoon. So he put his finger up with his pistol and shot his finger off. He was actually shot his finger off. But other than that, what we call battle accidents, they're happening all the time. Some serious, some not too serious, like a finger off. But others more serious.
What kind of thing? Just
carelessness, familiarity. When you everywhere you go, if you go to the toilet, you have your weapon with you. You will have to get a little careless, the best of people. I know one lads threw his Sten-Gun down and tired out, and he shot right across the dugout. That wounded a pal of his, so it's pure accident. And we smothered that. Just coming out as a battle accident.
Were there any self-inflicted wounds? Because they go.
Yes. Not a lot. I had one. No men's, no factory. And I give him the doubt of Shannon. We were getting ready to go out on patrol. And this hard knock, and he wasn't a jury. And to be honest, I'd had enough of him. I was going to deal with him when we came off the line.
What do you mean, deal with him? What was he doing that irritated you?
He was useless. He was a braggart. He was a bully, if he could have been. And when it came his turn for his patrol, and I had his first, one of the lads came running to me and said, so-and-so's accidentally shot himself. But when I got in, he's laid on this, what we used to make matches out on machine gun liners, with a hole right through his foot. Right through his foot there. there, I was sparing my sympathy. Not the medics, of course. That is very tough, and automatically he's got to be evacuated down, but he's put to the ground. So the company commander, and he moved again. I said, you know where he is? He says, yeah, I heard. I said, well, he's accidentally shot himself, so he says. And he says, yeah, I said, well, just get him off the company area, get him evacuated. And he won't be coming back to us. So that didn't move. There was a bit more to him.
But you were going to deal with him yourself. Were you going to deal with him officially or unofficially?
Well, officially. Unofficially, if he desired it. But officially. Tell him what I thought of him. And unless it was a great change, I'd demote him.
And if he'd taken against that?
He'd been demoted. If he hadn't taken either, the lads didn't like him. The soldiers under his immediate command didn't like him. And it was neither use nor him to us.
That was one. Any others?
But if you're under the man I told you about, just confronted me with a rifle. Forget his name. Other than that, very little.
Any desertions, or would they have nowhere to go?
I must. Just to come in here, this is. The things you had to deal with there was a soldier in the battalion decided he wanted to get married to a Korean girl. Well, of course, the first thing the army does is try and put you off. The second thing they do is tell you, well, if you're in the same mind in 6 months' time, come back and see me. Give you a cooling off period. You've got to remain moved away from your girlfriend. And all this normal, sensible talk, as you could understand yourself. But Colonel Jeffy, being where he was, said he would like to see the girl. So he brought her, and she was deaf and dumb. Honestly, she was deaf and dumb. Now, what he was doing, it was sympathy, and he was getting her passport to the UK, or she might have had a bit of. But this girl was deaf and dumb. Other than that, nothing to relate really. There was never a dull moment, there was always something going, especially on active service.
Was there any infiltration of the front lines by individual Chinese or Koreans?
Oh, yes. They did infiltrate, and to offset that, Lieutenant Bauer, one of our platoon officers, great fellow, the son of Sir John Bauer of the Metropolitan Police days, he was a cracker. He was a great officer. And Fuller said that he was a playboy. But of the right type, I backed a character. And I'll tell you what he did without anyone being informed. He crept out of our lines with two soldiers, crept across to the Chinese lines. This is the eve of the coronation. And took with him loads of fluorescent panels. And panelled ER2. I can't remember whether it was Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John. And when first light came and we all stood to, there we saw ER2 on the enemy lines. And Bill Nutbauer come to me. I said, you've done that, haven't you? Who's up next? Before you could say Jack Robinson. Colonel Peter. He found out. And he gave him a real admonition, but with pride. You know, I thought it was great. Woke up. But he didn't finish there, Colonel Peter. He said, well, Bill, you know, they use Christian name. He said, you did quite a job getting out there and putting those panels off. Yes, sir. He said, well, you can make another, finish the job off and go and bring them back. And he did. He went back the night after. Now, that was tricky. Because, you know, I'm not saying they think you were coming back for them. But how the Chinese left them there that long. And he went back and got them and brought them back in. And that just about...
Well, what would the Chinese infiltrators be doing?
Nothing really, only gaining information, strengths of enemy holding creatures.
There wasn't any behind-line sabotage or attacks then?
Not as we heard of. There may have been a bit further up the line. I think there was the odd rumours you got that had brought them to them, killed a few Turkish troops who weren't alert or whatever. They were much smarter. Because the small stature helps them quite a lot. But they're very adept soldiers by the Chinese. The Koreans were rubbish. They were rubbish.
What about, now you mentioned that someone was wearing a protective jacket. Were you all, did many of you have protective jackets? The chap who was wounded in the kidneys.
It was just under his protective. We all had protective jackets. See, this was another thing.
When did that come in?
Really, all the Korean War.
But not in Malaya?
Oh, no, we haven't in Malaya. That would be too hot in Malaya.
Flak jackets, then. Is that what you called them?
Well, we used to call them armoured vests. We call them flak jackets now. But we also were ordered, which I used to break and get reprimanded for, all day, all times, by day, you'd wear the tin topi. But they give you a spring head. They don't fit you. And they give you a terrible headache when you have them on all day. And I had to put one on. One of the things where I was wrong, but the troops didn't mind. They wore theirs. I used to go around with a cap comforter on. And I used to have my helmet with a chin strap strung on either. So that if
on your back?
Any confetti came around. But just to show them, at least I had it with me. But... it was sickness wearing that morning, noon, and night. You could have, I mean, we went to such details, did Colonel Jeffrey, when we got there, with all white vests and underpants. Towels were white. One of the first orders he gave, because if any chance you got to do a bit of washing, you'd do it. All garments to be dyed green to blend in with it. He had an eye for detail. He did everything great, did Jeffries. Wonderful man.
And well, just when you were out of the line, did you ever get to any of the Korean villages or towns?
Oh, we used to go out. They were villages, not towns. To be honest, you've seen one, you've seen a lot. We had our social life in the mess. Having dinner at evening, maybe 5 o'clock something, come back. You were forever cooking in the tents, chips and fried spam and all this business. And then up to the mess about 8 o'clock and there till about 4 in the morning.
So there's quite a bit of drinking then, even when you're out of the line in Korea?
20. The officer's mess burned down accidentally, but never mind.
When they were drunk, by implication?
I'm not saying that, but you probably want to bear in mind that when quartermaster stores burned down in the army, or messes burned down, it solves a lot of sins. For the officer's mess account books always get burnt. In the quartermaster store, he's bad accountancy, or he might have sold a couple of pair of boots here and there. A good fire resolves the problem.
So it might not have been because the officer was drunk. You don't want to say any more. You were suspicious. And what was the preferred tipple in the sergeant's mess?
Well, majority was beer. But such as the RQs, they were, you know, they were old men. They were about 5 years old, most of the RQs. You know, the regiment quartermaster, duty patrols, and the boardroom quartermaster, the chief clerk, they usually silly word to say, but usually the frailer types. They were the pink gin men and the whiskey bankers. You got the odd ones drank whiskey all the time, but predominantly Georgies, they were big men.
And was there any trouble with any of the other nationalities when you were out of the line? I mean, just soldiers fighting each other.
Oh, yeah, punch up, especially in old Chicago. I know that we were down there one night. There were about four or five Americans. I think three of them were black lads, two white. Absolutely outrageously drunk. You would fairly be significant in physique compared to them, but massive. And they were firing four or five Colts anywhere. I'll never forget that night. So we hit the deck as fast as we could till we got in a position where we'd get up and run for it. We hadn't a chance with them. Other than that,
how did you get on with the American troops generally?
They're such genial hosts. You know, we'd make our way down to the lines where their mobile bat unit was. We get about three or four sets of theirs.
Oh, you said, yeah.
Come out of there, and our identity disc were always on a piece of string. You know, your dog tags. Theirs were on a beautiful chain. So I went down with my pal, this sergeant, and said, you couldn't get me. I wanted one, actually. I really wanted it. The only necklace I could have in life. And he came back with about 50, you know. Beer, and you couldn't get much beer, especially up the line, get it in the mess and that. But bars of chocolate, take them back for your lads. Very, very generous indeed.
What did you think of them as troops? I mean, you said that they had a
different. I admire them, but I don't admire the tactics. The officers are far. Below par compared to ours.
In what way?
In every way, tactically. In every way. Let's put it this way, I know it's an old chestnut, but they haven't got the history of warfare behind them that ours have. I know it's an old cliche, but it is handed down. And with the county regiments, you know, all the families, the Greenwells, the Percys, the Jeffreys in our regiment, of all regiments were the same. They have no county affiliation or state affiliation, the Americans. They get the 21st Rangers, and you have men from Dallas, from the Bronx, from the East Coast, the West Coast, all mixed up. And they have the same affiliation as we had at home. And I found that when we were giving our defensive plans, when we were handing over to the Americans, they listened so intent. They made a note of everything they were told. They had a chap there who writing it. They really did appreciate our fire plans, defensive fire, SOS fire, and everything that our fire cards, you couldn't leave without leaving them forward. They wanted, that's what they wanted. That's what they were entitled to. But they really glorified. They wanted to see the map, how it was marked, where our positions were for attack, if we had to withdraw quickly, which way we'd do it. They didn't miss a detail, especially.
But they didn't work it out for themselves.
No. If it was given to them by us, that was sufficient. I'll tell you one little thing to finalise, career. I don't know the name of the regiment, some Rangers. We went up and we showed them that we put a double dammit fence about 100 yards out into no man's land. And the object of this one was that in the event of a big action on the valley floor, if we draw them to this wire, our troops behind the wire, they wouldn't know the wire was there.